Today is Wednesday, April the 9th, 100th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Supervisor Estelle Fennell. How you doing?
Doing great, Brian. How are you doing?
Oh, shaky at best, but that's normal.
Soaking up all those earthquakes or something?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Do you guys feel a lot more of them in southern Humboldt than we do in other parts?
Actually, no. I think we're kind of even these days. You have all sorts of ones up here.
Yeah, well, it just kind of makes life a little bit more exciting.
Yeah.
That's what we need is more excitement. This afternoon, we got a couple different things to talk about. Water politics.
Okay.
You betcha. We'll also talk a little bit about law enforcement and Estelle's vote last week about the camping ordinance.
Oh, okay.
Or emergency ordinance or whatever we're going to phrase this thing, but we'll talk about it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Madeleine L'Engle. 1972, quote, "The creative impulse, like love, can be killed, but it can't be taught."
Oh.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
So it's a genetic weakness that I have. Oh, boy.
I would say strength.
I had an interesting conversation a couple weeks ago. I even forget who it was, but the discussion, it was around water and the drought.
Yeah.
And let's put that in quotes, the drought.
Yes.
And it was all kind of came around to just as we have other things being driven by the political machine, drought now is moving into it. Energy efficiency was kind of the template. Now we have is these goofy light bulbs instead of regular light bulbs, and they're made in China instead of in America, and they all have little transformers in them instead of having the et cetera, et cetera. And we all have those. You know, and then how do you get rid of toxic waste? Because that's what these things are instead of the, just all this associatedness.
Yeah. All those bright ideas.
Yeah. So somebody said, and you know, water is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying, droughts take 3 years to get into.
Yeah.
We're not in the third year of a drought. Okay. Water is a storage issue.
Yes.
Okay, but we've been tearing out dams instead of putting in dams.
Mm-hmm.
At least at our end of the state. But did you realize there's a big one going in around L.A. and that it's this commodity that the state is playing the game with? And it was this past weekend, Jerry Brown term one, or cycle one, big proponent of the peripheral canal. That's where Danny Walsh got involved. Okay, guess what? Here we come again.
Yep.
You represented a good portion of the county that is water challenged at times.
At times.
Do you sense that this whole thing is water politics and we just have moved on from fuel to energy and now it's water? It's another area that we can have regulated by big government.
Well, the problem is that we've been talking a lot in the rural areas about water storage as a good way to go. What's happened now is that everybody's jumping on board, and the drought just opened up all sorts of gates for funding, etc. And at the same time, we have the governor pushing his dream project. So, of course, it falls into line for people who want to use it as a clarion call, and one has to be concerned about that in terms of how it's going to be used. We talked about incentivizing water storage in the California Department of Fish and Wildlife came up with an emergency plan, but it doesn't really hit all of the issues that rural Californians are dealing with. So, you know, it's always difficult when you take an issue that's close to the ground and you bring it into the halls of Sacramento or on the federal level into the halls of Washington, D.C., it just seems to lose all sense of reality, you know.
Do you fear, could you see an outcome where water policy, fish and game,
mm-hmm.
became just as aggressive and militant as the Coastal Commission?
Well, California? It could, for sure. You know, I mean, because there, you know, there are agencies whose main mission is to protect water for fish, wildlife, etc. And then, of course, there's agencies, as we've discussed before, like the Division of Water Rights, which talks about our right to the water, and we really have to keep those in balance, and we have to keep that in front of us and not let it slip away. You know, at this point, I had a very interesting conversation with the some representatives of the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, because they're looking at what are they going to do with their water rights or lose them. And one of the issues they talk about is a pipeline. Something that's interesting is that the Mad River used to dry up in the old days, kind of like Eelwood. It was a seasonal thing, but it doesn't as much anymore because of the water coming out of the Root Dam. So, Root Lake, I should say. So, you know, we've been manipulating the water situation for quite some time. My whole goal is to make sure that if we are, that we're think about us first.
Remuneration?
We absolutely have to keep an eye on that. And that's definitely a challenge for Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, too, is how can they keep the rights at the same time as get the value of it in your remuneration, as you said. Who can do that?
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Estelle Fennell.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good...
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. Estelle, in the first break, or the first segment, rather, talking a little bit about water politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, I don't know if it was Alderaan Laird, one of the board
members that,
Carol's outfit or whoever it was. But they were talking about desalinization plants, and there's one that's going up, mm-hmm. and the cost of the pipe
mm-hmm.
delivery system from here to East Bay Mud is roughly twice the cost of a desalinization plant.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's not gonna happen. I'm really simple-minded, but if you're looking at one solution
mm-hmm.
and another solution, and one is controlled by yourself, and the other is relying on somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and one is right there, and the other goes through earthquake areas, all kinds of goofiness potential, and one is twice as expensive, and they all line up on the same side. Why are we even talking about, you know, whether it's a peripheral canal or whatever? Why not have a series of desalinization plants
mm-hmm.
in California in those areas that are overbuilding into desert or over-agriculturing into areas that aren't naturally wet? and say, here you go, guys. You want it, you pay for it, it's right there.
Plus, which their whole structure is set up in that direction anyway. I really think that the southern part of the state needs to look really seriously at that. And I think they are, to tell you the truth.
Well, and the Sacramento Delta, too.
Yeah.
You know, these engines at the dams are going to die, so those pumps are going to eventually no longer function. So why not build for tomorrow today?
Well, and I think they are, and they're also they've been looking at it for quite some time, looking at all different methods of doing it, looking at the impact on the fisheries, et cetera, et cetera. There's always some impact, no matter where, but you can't do things without having some kind of input.
Yeah, you take a step down the trail, you're impacting something.
Exactly, exactly. So you really have to balance that out and go, what makes more sense for people in the South? What makes more sense for us? And how can we work it out? And I think we can actually make that situation with the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District work for Humboldt and possibly Mendocino County as well. I think that would be pretty good.
Does CSAC get into this kind of stuff at all? The supervisors for the state?
CSAC does look at those. They've been, you know, keeping the tabs on all of the water bills and all of that.
Is there any sympathy to this concept of desalinization? Build it rather than draining one region or transporting water?
You know, that's a good question. I would definitely bring that up there with them. I think maybe Virginia might have a little bit more, but I know she can't talk
to her. Well, you can talk to her.
Yeah, I'll talk to Virginia. Yeah, right, right. You can't talk to her. Next time we'll talk about what she has to report back from CSAC as far as desalinization. Or I can talk with those guys. To tell you the truth, I've been really concentrating on what we've got going here. And, you know,
well, does it make sense to put a pipeline into southern Humboldt? I mean, that's certainly
well,
a lot
shorter.
Well,
that's one of the things they're looking at, actually.
Does that pencil out, or do you have to have that huge end user down the line?
You've got to have an end user down the line. You have to have somebody who can actually pay for it. And one upside of this timing, if you will, is all the money that's being channeled towards water management now. So it might not be a bad time to start making those plans and pulling the money in. But it's a very expensive prospect. I mean, it really is. They're talking about a line along the ridge.
Up on top of.
Yeah, yeah, right, going down towards Alder Point, et cetera, and going on down towards Dos Rios into Mendocino County. That's one they're looking at. And
is there thoughts that the wine industry can step up? Because I know in Mendocino County, that's the big battle between wine and, I guess, either traditional or non-wine.
Well, they certainly were thirsty. They would want water.
Yeah, I would think that something like this would take care of that, could fill up Berryessa, maybe even Clear Lake. I mean, I don't know if they would want to be introducing. Well, I don't know. We've introduced stuff from Clear Lake into the Eel. I suppose we could go the other way around.
Well, it's going to be a very, very interesting discussion. And I do think that the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District has done a great job of, you know, looking at all sides. They had all sorts of dreams about what they could do with the water, including just saying the beneficial use for the fish. But that won't pencil out at all. And I think if they go in that direction, chances are very good that the state will just take the water and that will be it.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this does play out, but from my part of the hill, if there's a desalinization plant in Sacramento and a couple in Southern California, they don't need to take the water.
No.
They'll have their own
water.
Thank you very much.
They have plenty of water, yeah. And, you know, you've got the sea level rise. You've got plenty of salt water to desalinate.
KINS, News and Information Times 3:30. We'll be back with more from Estelle Fennell.
Introducing Tapas and Tinis in the Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino. Spring is here, so on your way home from the beach, come check out the sunset. Restaurant doors will be opening an hour earlier, offering a small plate, tapas, menu available at a discounted price from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Signature martinis will be reduced to $7, and happy hour also applies with dollar-off drafts and wells. Also, make sure to check out the new spring menu for an amazing dinner, available starting at 5 p.m. daily. The Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino, just off the 101 in Trinidad.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the lovely Estelle.
Getting herself in trouble. Yeah,
absolutely, but loving every step of it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Got to keep life lively.
Boy. The vote that the Supes took a week ago yesterday for the removal. The removal of the ordinance, rescinding the ordinance, recognizing it's no longer an emergency ordinance. I don't know that terminology, but the anti-camping ordinance that was a huge assist for EPD, Eureka Police, to get the occupiers off the front of the courthouse lawn. Was that decision made because there's no urgency right in front of everybody's face now to deal with it? Is it because there's something else going on? What was the thought process you had in voting in favor of repealing it?
From the get-go, I felt that, to be, to follow up on and be consistent, I'm no fan of extra regulations, of building on top of building on top of building. It was my feeling, and it still is, that there are plenty of laws on the books to deal with the kind of situation that evolved at that time. What was required was fast and decisive action. This was something that just basically went out of control and was taken over by people who I don't even think were really protesting anymore. They were just living there.
It seemed to me like it was a parallel between that and when they were camping on the South Spit and they were camping at Clam Beach. But is there just not clarity with the codes that are in place, or an understanding of the clarity, or a willingness, or why was this other layer needed to be used by police to eliminate that situation?
Well, they never call it an emergency, but they call it an urgency. And, from my perspective anyhow, it really was, it mirrored what a lot of communities were going through. Now, Arcata dealt with it pretty well.
I believe Randy sent everybody to Eureka.
Well, they moved everybody along, that's for sure. You had cities like Oakland and New York that were basically had big sections taken over for quite a while, and they were having a hard time figuring out how to deal with it. So I'm not finding fault with our local community in terms of finding themselves in that bind, but I do think that should something of that nature pop up in the future, I would hope that we would react quickly and decisively and make very, very clear what is allowed and what is not allowed, and not let people push and push and push. And my take on it, and I said before, I think one of the speakers said, part of the camping was a protest, and if you are going to do civil disobedience as a protest, you have to expect to be arrested. And that by the same token, you can't say, if you do that, I'm going to arrest you, and then not arrest. You have to kind of, be very clear. And if you draw a line in the sand, you've got to make sure that you remember where that line is.
So with the laws that are in place today, you feel that they've got enough tools to be able to eliminate this or not allow this to come back again?
I would hope so, yeah. I mean, if I'm wrong and we have to do it again, we will, but it's my understanding that there are plenty of laws on the books to preclude that kind of situation from happening. And, that's the message I'm sending out loud and clear. We basically need to be more decisive when these kind of situations develop. And it's never happened before.
I would think, stepping back just a moment, the sheriff, you can't really tell the sheriff what to do.
No, you can't really tell
the DA to do. And you certainly can't tell the police chief of another jurisdiction what to do.
Yeah.
So how are you going to impart this knowledge to these law enforcement agencies as a supervisor?
Well, you know, just as any person in the outlying areas or any neighborhood in Eureka, Arcata, or anywhere else would say, I would expect law enforcement to protect the area around the courthouse. I would expect them to enforce the law, especially.
Well, your house, my house. I mean, same.
Yeah,
same,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's you know, that's the job. That's the job you're there for. And in the sheriff's case, yes, it is. It's kind of a mixed bag because it is in the city of Eureka, but it's a county building. The sheriff happens to have his offices in that building. I mean, you know, I think there's only, you have to prioritize and say, okay, this is what needs to be addressed at this point. And I would hope that that would be the case. Of course, I can't tell them what to do.
But I wonder,
I'd ask them very nicely.
I wonder if we put in cactus. If that would eliminate
a cactus garden.
Yeah, cactus and rock, you know, pointed rocks and stuff.
Well,
so.
I want to say is
low maintenance, no issue.
High spend. You know, my whole take on this is, again, we have the rules in place. We have the laws in place. We just need to enforce them. How many times have we heard that laws are not being enforced and what that does to the community? This was a very egregious example of that. And I think it also was an unusual situation because there was a whole call from Wall Street area to occupy the 1%. Now, I happen to believe that none of the 1% were working in the courthouse, but nonetheless, that was the target.
Yeah. So it's an enforcement issue rather than
I think that absolutely
issue.
Yeah, and I have full confidence in Chief Mills. I have full confidence in Sheriff Downey. I think that given that support from the supervisors to yes, go ahead and enforce the law, they would just do just that.
KINS News and Information Times 3:43. We'll be back with more from Estelle Fennell.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. Estelle, you mentioned about law enforcement. I know the sheriff doesn't have what he would like,
funding-wise.
And I don't think anybody, you know, the whole criminal justice system doesn't have what they would like. From some of the challenges, the special challenges out of the second, and not the pot, but the ruralness and if concentration, you have diluted population centers, I guess that would be the simplest. Is there any way that the second district really will have the kind of law enforcement protection that other districts in the county have?
You know, that's an extremely important question. I think that we are seeing the results of lack of law enforcement in throughout the county, basically, but especially in the outlying areas. And I understand completely the fact that the budget is so tight that it's hard to fill those positions and keep people on the ground on a 24-hour basis. In fact,
before you jump in too deep here.
Yeah.
Law enforcement
yeah.
or criminal justice prosecution of those that law
That's
enforcement
another part.
Is arresting?
That's a huge part of it. And, you know, AB 109 and realignment is making it extremely difficult, too. Here we have a whole bunch of people who go in and out of jail as if it were, I don't know, just their backyard or something. I mean, they're literally go
Jeff,
in.
It's a cafeteria.
They go back that. Out and they're back in, and it doesn't seem to have any deterrent effect at all, because they know that the jails are crowded and they can't be held, and you know it just doesn't impress on them the same way as it might you or I if we were picked up and put in handcuffs. You know, I mean it's kind of par for the course. So we've got a lot of people out there who are addicted to methamphetamine and heroin, etc. And we have a lot of mentally ill people, and we have very little resources to deal with them. And I've always felt badly for law enforcement because they're the ones who finally have to deal with these.
Is the Department of Health and Human Services, who is under you guys' control,
mm-hmm.
do they have the flexibility, or do you have the flexibility to allocate some of the dollars in, much more into mental health, into some of those arenas that you were talking about, to deal with those types of folks rather than some of the areas that the resources, whether it's manpower or matching grants and that kind of stuff, are currently being applied?
Well, I know that a lot of the grants and programs that come down from the federal and the state coffers are specifically oriented towards this program, that program, or the other program. But there is a certain amount of flexibility, and there certainly are quite a lot of funds there for mental health. So we are looking at that on many different levels in terms of how can it be better appropriated, how can the programs be improved. I know that part of the dream for the new jail was that there would be a resource center as that part of that extension that would deal with that kind of thing. I'm on a group that came out of the meth awareness meeting that's looking at legislation in terms of whether or not, you know, if somebody is really hooked on methamphetamine, for instance, if they can be actually kept against their will to make them deprogram
protect
them.
The community,
yeah, and protect the community. So there we are looking as a community. I think that the police chief is looking, I think the sheriff is looking, we're all looking right now for how we can better manage this situation before it gets completely out of control.
So it's not necessarily just a pure relationship to dollars and cops.
It's how it's managed.
It's now evolving
and prioritizing.
That.
Yeah, and we do have to look at other revenue sources, I believe. You know, whether we like it or not, we actually do have to think about how are we going to fund all of this law enforcement. And
where now, the state apparently has $15 or $16 billion surplus this year.
Wow.
Are they talking about stepping up and dealing with any of these situations, or is this seen as an opportunity to go willy-nilly spending?
Well, I'm not sure what they're doing, except that they're, you know, it's Governor Brown's dream to have a few different goals, let's say, and I guess we'll talk about it another time.
Thanks, Ricky. Yeah, you just bailed out. Give me a break. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone else. See you tomorrow.